With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Are you looking for the perfect way to take your brand to the next level? Want to reach a dedicated, engaged audience that's all ears? With AudioHook.com, you can do just that. AudioHook is the premier podcast advertising platform, connecting advertisers with some of the best podcasts in the world. AudioHook uses advanced targeting techniques to ensure your message reaches the right ears at the right time. With detailed analytics, you'll be able to track your campaign's performance and optimize your strategy for maximum impact. Plus, their team of experts are there every step of the way, providing guidance and support to make your campaign a success. So, whether you're a startup, a small business owner, or a marketing pro, AudioHook is your one-stop shop for podcast advertising success. Head over to audiohook.com to start your journey today.
Brand new for the 2022 season, it's the RVK. We're coming at you two ways on 2 days. It's Monday and Thursday. Jeremy J.N. Fiend Phoenix and me, Brandon Phoenix, a.k.a. I also hate Pitt. We are the Raspy Voice Kids. We are the Raspy Voice Kids podcast. You get pop culture Monday at 7 a.m. You get the West Virginia University podcast Thursdays at 7 a.m. Either way, no matter what we say, you're going to have fun. So, like we like to tell you, get at your boys.
Welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I am your host, Andy Mitz. Today, we are previewing the upcoming opponent for the Kansas Jayhawks. Look, this is a really weird situation to be in because if you had told me that Kansas or that one of these teams would be 5-1 coming into this game with a realistic shot of competing for the Big 12 and the other one would be 0-3 in the conference and 3-3 overall, I would have thought that these teams were flipped, but Kansas is facing the Oklahoma Sooners on the road this week. As the team with the better record and the team that has been playing better recently. But let's go ahead and take a look at Oklahoma. To help me do that, it is Keegan Renaud who is joining me today. Keegan, how you doing?
I'm good. Life is not too bad. You've got postseason baseball on as well as you've got a little college football game. I saw a little stat today for like the next 6 weeks. We have football on 5 of the 7 nights a week.
That's crazy.
Something along those lines. So it's that time of the year, man, where it's going to be every night. You're going to have at least something to watch. I don't know much about Louisiana and Marshall, but it's been – and they've been flying around hitting each other, so I've been watching.
Yeah, it's one of those things. If you really want to watch college football, you can find it pretty much all the time, or well, I guess football in general. So yeah, it's a great time to have that. And, of course, basketball is going to be starting – college basketball is going to be starting here pretty soon too, so then we'll have all three.
Hey, Kansas basketball is brand number 2 in Lawrence right now, all right?
Fair. Basketball. No, it's funny because, this is not a Kansas basketball podcast yet. We are getting there. They're going to have to share time like they usually do, but usually sharing time is the football team gets about 15 minutes in an episode, and then we talk about basketball stuff around this time, you know, getting ready for the season and all of that. Now, instead, we are focusing completely on the football program, and we will talk about basketball when basketball actually gets started, which will be happening when this episode comes out, actually, is the night of Late Night in the Fog. So if you guys have not been able to get tickets, you can take a look at the Kansas Athletics app and get your fill, I guess, of the scrimmages and then the banner hanging that will be happening. That will all be on the app. So anyway, let's go ahead and talk about this Oklahoma team. I can tell that you are trying to find other things to talk about because of how difficult this season seems to have been so far. So let's go ahead and jump right in, though. What's going on with this Oklahoma team? Because, like, I think everybody just thought, you know, yes, it's Brent Venables, brand new coach. You know, they lost a decent amount of talent when Riley took half of his squad with him, essentially. But, I mean, they had a, you know, transfer quarterback in Dylan Gabriel, who a lot of people were really high on coming into the year. You know, thought about Venables potentially, you know, kickstarting this defense that's been an issue the last few years. What is going on, though, with Oklahoma? Like, why have things been so difficult so far this year?
I think it's a culmination of things, right? It's never always one thing. I think whenever you looked at the way the schedule set up, and Andy, I know you do read my stuff all the time. When you do look at the way the schedule set up this season, it presented a unique challenge for a defense that has been put through the ringer. Really, I mean, at the end of 2020, I know I've put some statistics out. At the end of 2020, OU had a defense that was playing as well as anybody in the country. And that's with any advanced statistic that you look at. And so last year's free fall was obviously just alarming for Alex Grinch. And I think you're seeing some of that play out on the West Coast right now. And so, you know, this was a defense that struggled at doing the little things right a year ago, run fitting, alignment, you know, discipline, all those small things that they were really, really good at. It's at the end of 2020, it just started to fall away. And as everyone in life knows, whenever you have bad habits, those habits tend to stick around until you can get them out. And this has been a defense so far that the linebackers in the Kansas State game are going to be tested if they could deal with any split zone stuff. Obviously failed, as in they, just like they did a year ago in the TCU game, the secondary's athleticism was going to be tested, failed just like they were a year ago. And then they were going to play Texas, which was all very similar to both. They were going to do a lot of what both TCU and Kansas State did. And so heading into the year, like I always go back and try to use my preseason priors as much as I can. And I know I do change my opinion as we get here in the season. But I mean, I had Oklahoma starting 1-2 in conference play. So nothing defensively has been, I know you've seen me say this, has been really all that surprising to me. Now, then you flip it on the other side of the football. I think they got a warm welcome. I've long had a long belief that Kansas State's defense was going to be one of the best in the Big 12. And the second half against them was really, really impressive. And I have been super impressed with what Jeff Levy has schematically, concept-wise, put together for this offense so far. Everybody's going to look at the goose egg in the Texas game. It's hard because I know opposing fans and heard all offseason Lincoln this, Lincoln Riley that, and you know, my timeline hasn't been that all that much. But this is certainly one of those situations where you looked at the way that he recruited an elite quarterback every other year for a reason, to ensure that he had a year in between. So a guy would come in and sit for a year, and then would he be his job the next one. And when that happens, that bridge quarterback typically doesn't stick around. So when you kind of go back through the timeline, right? In 2018, he signed Tanner Mordecai. 2019 was Spencer Rattler. Rattler was the guy. Mordecai was the bridge quarterback. In 2020, he signed Chandler Morris. In 21, it was Caleb Williams. So Chandler Morris was the bridge quarterback. So Tanner Mordecai, starting quarterback at SMU. Chandler Morris won the starting job out of TCU camp. Spencer Rattler is the starting quarterback at South Carolina. And Caleb Williams is the starting quarterback at USC. Caleb Williams entered the transfer portal on January 4th. So if you kind of go back and you want to use revisionist history at all and kind of go look at the whole situation, Oklahoma cut ties with Caleb Williams quick, and that cost them a chance to get him back in the portal. If they were going to do that, maybe do that a little bit earlier and don't let him play in the bowl game, and basically kind of use you a little bit to your advantage for NIL and bowl game hype. He was like the Alamo Bowl MVP, you know, Caleb Williams this, Caleb Williams that. I mean, the problem is at that late in the game for quarterback portaling, I know I'm getting long-winded here, for the portal with quarterbacks, there's probably only going to be a handful of guys available that are starting quality at the Power 5 level. And when Dillon Gabriel and Jeff Levy have a prior relationship and you get Dillon Gabriel committed, it's going to be really hard to get another guy even of that kind of caliber to come play, specifically as a transfer that are looking to start. It's a tough situation offensively. That's what Lincoln Riley wanted, that he wanted to blow up the quarterback room, and he succeeded. Like, you got to give him, you got to give a guy credit whenever they do exactly what they set out to. The problem is defensively, they're having an identity crisis 6 games into the season. And I know you, I've said so far this week, I mean, this, we've seen a 55-40 game in Norman before between Oklahoma and Kansas. And so I don't know why people should be all that surprised at a potential opportunity for Saturday to be a track meet.
Oh, yeah. I think it's definitely going to be a track meet. I mean, Kansas, even though they are on their backup quarterback in Jason Bean, he is just as talented and probably, well, he's probably not quite as accurate, but he's a lot faster in terms of running with his legs, and he can throw the ball as we saw against TCU. He can sling it all over the place. So I'm not worried about Kansas offense being able to do anything. And kind of as you put it, like, we'll go ahead and start with the defense because I think that's the bigger story. And then we'll go ahead and talk about the offense here in a little bit. But looking at this defense, because you talked about how good they were at the end of 2020 and it all fell apart in 2021. And I think there was a lot of people, or I guess opinion was split. Coming out of the 2021 season, was it an Alex Grinch issue or was it a personnel issue? And I think we're finding out this year that it probably was both, because, you know, Alex Grinch is having some difficulties still where he's at, you know, and obviously Oklahoma's having a ton of issues with what they have. How much of it, though, do you think it's that Venables is trying to install a different type of system, or maybe not Venables himself, but his defensive coordinator? Like, are they trying to install something new and that's part of the problem? Or is it just that these guys aren't disciplined enough right now to be able to run what they need to run?
Oh, when you run the 3-3-5 and specifically what Iowa State runs, right? Oklahoma's attempted to run that the last couple of weeks. The thing that people forget, what makes that defense so good is that Iowa State has linebackers and safeties that are so damn good against the run. They're just coming downhill. They trigger fast. They're physical. Oklahoma doesn't have that. They do. Billy Bowman's hurt. Key Lawrence is hurt. So it's like it's been really the last 3 years where when you go look at 2020, Delaron Turner-Yell was hurt and Trey Norwood was hurt. Those two guys come back and that secondary looked much better. A year ago, Key Lawrence got hurt. Woody Washington was hurt. Not Key Lawrence. Woody Washington was hurt. And they had another safety. Delaron Turner-Yell was hurt. Those guys come back the final 3 games and the defense looks a lot better. Could it be an injury thing? Could the depth just not be good enough? And then the other side, obviously, where my biggest complaints come from. If you're going to run this defense, which Georgia and Alabama run this defense, they run a 3-man front, they run a tight front. And again, you can have a Will Anderson, you can have a Nolan Smith. Oklahoma doesn't have those guys, right? They don't have the horses up front to dominate with a 3-man or even at times a 4-man front. And so when the strength of your defense are the defensive tackles, taking one of those guys off the field, for me, I don't get the process, right? Like, if they were all about playing this 3-man, this odd front and being multiple and playing this flyover defense, then play the players that are going to be playing in it for the next 3 years. Play the players that are going to be playing it for the next 2, because they're playing players right now that are going to be around only this year and next year. So if you're going to play it, play for the future. If not, then play the defense that fits this personnel. Alex Grinch was an even front guy. And so I think they're just searching, man. Like, and you can tell, like, the way their blitz calls are so noticeably coming, and they come in the most obvious situations. And so, like, you even go back the last 3 weeks, if you just chart every time they blitz, look how many yards they're giving up, right? Because it's supposed to be the opposite. It's like they're panicking and throwing just a bunch of stuff at the wall and none of it's working. With the caveat, I'm going to say this. Oklahoma did force Texas to go on some long drives, which Kansas is going to attempt to do that again on Saturday and more than likely try to play the low possession game that they were hoping to play against TCU that obviously turned into a track meet in the second half that was really, really fun in the third quarter. But they were kind of okay defensively against Texas a little bit, like structurally, like in position at times. than the blitzes, though, man. Like, that's where they got absolutely crushed. Every time they brought a blitz, Texas was picking up like 10 plus.
Yeah.
And that was a little over exaggeration, but yeah.
Well, no, it really wasn't. Like, they were picking up quite a bit every single time that Oklahoma blitzed, which is, I think, kind of to your point, it seems like alignment is an issue often. It seems like guys are making bad reads often. Like, I looked at that TCU game, and, you know, because I was charting for TCU because they were the team playing Kansas, but I couldn't help but notice, like, Oklahoma, there were so many times where TCU picked up tons of yards, not because they made a fantastic play or they had a key block or something. It's because Oklahoma broke the wrong way and took a full 2 seconds to realize the guy was running the wrong direction. Like, there was just bad, you know, awareness. There was bad stuff all over the place. And I don't know how much of that then is coaching and the guys just not getting the message, or how much is that the guys that are out there just aren't, you know, like, aren't really ready to be out there. And it sounds like it's a little bit of both, but, you know, looking at this, when you look at an offense like the Jayhawks have, where they have so many different guys that can run, they have so many different guys that are catching passes. I mean, you have a tight end who can go, or you have two different tight ends that can go off at any moment, you know, and then you have a huge stable of wide receivers that all can catch the ball. Like, what, how does a team like Oklahoma plan for this? How do you prepare to try to stop the Jayhawks and what they're doing offensively?
I think specifically you start with the run game. Oklahoma hasn't defended split zone in 2 years, right? And that's a little harsh. I'm not a defensive coordinator. I'm not in that room. I don't know the run fits. I don't know the calls. I can just tell you, when you have two linebackers in no place where the football is at, that's a problem. And that happened a lot in last year's game, including a guy in Brian Asamoah who was a top 100 pick in the NFL draft. I mean, those guys had no idea what they were looking at and playing against, it looked like. Then you have to remember last year, Oklahoma did take that Monday off of practice, which was very criticized at the time, and probably should have prepared a little bit more for Kansas a year ago. Kansas offensively, you know, I think the biggest thing is this defense. I worry that they're going to sell out one direction here in this game, if you're talking about what Oklahoma is going to do. And the problem that they would have had, and I just want to speak, the only difference between Bean and Daniels in this game, and I know Daniels has been a little bit more inaccurate now that the competition has picked up. Trust me, I think he's still going to be fine as a quarterback. But this was definitely one of those games where, like, a lot of play action could have get Oklahoma beat because they're going to sell out. They see what Kansas is doing to teams in the run game, and I promise you their answer is going to be just get as many guys to the line of scrimmage as possible. A year ago, over the last 2 years, even say if Lance Leopold was around 3 years ago, probably not a situation where, like, I'd be all that concerned. If Jalen Daniels is playing quarterback, yeah, I think Kansas could do whatever they wanted against Oklahoma on Saturday. So, you know, just to kind of isolate a couple things, obviously the split zone read and the split zone stuff that Kansas does really well. And for listeners, I'm sure you've explained all this. Essentially, whenever the damn fullback is coming across the line of scrimmage opposite of where the run is going, the quarterback's probably keeping the football. And I'm just hoping and praying for my family's health and safety over the weekend that Oklahoma can pick that up.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because I do think that Kansas does a lot of the same things when Bean's in. And, you know, I've seen a lot of people talking about how, well, you know, when Daniel's in, they do a lot of things differently. And I think what we've actually found and what they talked about in the press conference afterwards was that the last week and a half against Iowa State and TCU, that first half, they got away from a lot of the, you know, option reads that they were doing and a lot of the weird stuff in the running game that really kind of opened up a lot of holes. But Kansas does really well about getting blockers out in space as well. And I think that's the one thing that's kind of difficult to deal with this team. The offensive line has been extremely solid, and they definitely bring in extra blockers at times when they need to. But, you know, they have been very, very good run blocking. They've been very good about getting guys out in the passing game to block as well. It's very infrequent that you find a wide receiver who has caught a ball within 5 yards of, you know, of the line of scrimmage, that he doesn't then have another guy out in front of him able to block for him to give him a few extra yards. So I will be interested to kind of see what Oklahoma is able to do there. I think Oklahoma in the past, they've been just so much more physical, you know, because they're a lot more physically talented. They're a lot bigger usually than who they're going up against. I don't know that they necessarily have that advantage this year. While they probably have some guys that are bigger than some some of the guys that are on Kansas, but Kansas has shown really well that they know, you know, the zone blocking that they do and a lot of the different things that they do to move guys around and confuse defenses have been very successful. And so I will be interested to see, like you said, how well Oklahoma was able to pick up on it, you know, and able to kind of stop it. And I think if I'm an Oklahoma fan, the thing I'm worried about, like you said, is they're going to sell out so much for the run that Kansas is going to be able to hit some deep ones over the top. How has Oklahoma's secondary been this year, though? Like, are you worried just in general about the fact that Kansas has several deep threats, some guys that can burn you, or have they been fairly solid so far?
I mean, they haven't played a consistent lineup yet. The part of their problem is they do have a couple of guys hurt. I mean, Key Lawrence is a much better – like, he got clowned, number 12, the safety from Oklahoma, with Max Duggan's long run. It's like, oh, you like Max Duggan outran him. The guy was dealing with a hamstring injury, you know? So, like, you have that. You have Billy Bowman has an injury. He's the other starting safety for them. And so, you know, when those are the two guys you were rolling with to start the year, you were hoping to, and now they're both out. I mean, depth's probably not where it needs to be at Oklahoma. And so, yeah, the guys playing behind them just aren't nearly as talented. It's nothing against Justin Broyles. It's something against some of the guys that are playing. They're just not nearly as good. And so when you kind of get in that situation, you know, it's going to put them in a really, really, really tough spot. I think the secondary itself does have talented players that aren't playing good football. They're also being asked to do things that they haven't been asked to do. Like the way that you have to, as everyone knows in this league, the way you have to defend the run from the safety position in this league is different than any other. And you're accounted more, you're relied on more, you have to be a sure tackler. Again, it's just different. And so I don't know if Oklahoma has those guys. And whenever you're playing a three-man front and you don't have those guys and you don't have defensive linemen that can just absolutely molly-whip everybody like Georgia, Alabama, oh, by the way, and Clemson have for this upcoming – for that halves for this season. So, yeah, you know, I think you're stuck between a rock and a hard place. I said this after the Kansas State game. The even front's not working. The odd front's not working. Just outscore everybody the next 4 weeks. Dylan Gabriel gets hurt, right? Expected to be back this week. But I truly think, I mean, there's nothing I can map out in my head that's going to tell me Oklahoma's going to stop Kansas on Saturday. Maybe it's one of those things where, like, Oklahoma can get more stops against Kansas than Kansas can get against Oklahoma, and that's why the line is at 9 or 7, or it was at 7 and 9. Like, maybe that's the thought with this game. But again, I think any Oklahoma fan heading down the Norman, and at this point, they're all accepted the defense sucks. So everybody's like accepted the fact there's going to be probably a lot of points in this game, but it's going to be an annoyingly a lot of points too. Like,
yeah,
like Kansas, you know this better than anybody. The way Kansas run offense is going to annoy the shit out of everybody in Norman.
Oh yeah, for sure.
It's an art form. Like if I was running a high, it could be run in college. Like you look at what Jalen Hurts is doing with the Philadelphia Eagles. It's not really all that different from what Kansas is doing in the Big 12. But like if I was running like a small school, like Oklahoma or Kansas high school team, like I'd just run that offense the entire game.
Oh yeah. 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 It's super successful. It has a lot of flexibility. It makes it really easy.
Not to cut you off like one final time. It's so amazing. It's so disciplined. Like I'm responsible for Kansas for work and I get to watch them every single week. And it's just, they're so precise. They know beat themselves. You mentioned a second ago, the route, the way these guys are schemed open is amazing. I sit here and talk about like the third and fourth down stuff and how like, it's just, you can't keep winning and usually relying that much on third and fourth down success. But son of a bitch, they're open. Like, you get into fourth and three, and it's like, okay, there's no way they're going to be able to pick this one up. And next thing you know, you got a guy that's within – there's no one within 10 yards of him anywhere. And it's every single week. It's like
right. Or like you have
– is like 50 plays deep.
Yeah, or like you have, you know, trips over to the left and all of a sudden one guy peels off and they, you know, toss the reverse over to him and he's like wide open out, you know, going right and picks up just enough for the first down. Yeah. Stuff like that happens all the time because, you know, I think I talk about just how impressive Kotelnicki has been in terms of making the right calls and kind of, you know, doing that sort of stuff. And you definitely saw them get away from what they typically were doing against Iowa State And they acknowledge as much in the, you know, in the press conference afterwards, saying like they, you know, saw what Iowa State was trying to do defensively and thought that they were going to try to change some stuff up to take advantage of it, and it just didn't work. So like they've definitely gotten away from that a little bit, but against TCU in the second half, that was them going back to the exact same type of plays that they had been doing that had been so successful against everybody else at the beginning of the year. So it'll be interesting to see how much they're able to keep that going, how much Oklahoma's able to do to try to at least slow it down. Because you're right, they're not going to stop it. The question is, how much can you slow it down? Can you make it so that your offense can score enough to get out of there with a victory? So, okay, speaking of things that are not going to be slowed down, it is the fantastic collection of vintage college apparel at sponsor here on the podcast, Home Field Apparel. Home Field Apparel, the most comfortable vintage college sports apparel anywhere. T-shirts, sweaters, hoodies, joggers, whole bunch more. They have more than 140 different schools, all kinds of great vintage logos, and they're continuing to add new stuff, refreshing a lot of lines all the time. I have way too much Home Field stuff. I tell you guys this all the time, but it's all great, and I'm always looking to get more because, let me tell you, it is fantastic. It is super comfortable. The logos are awesome and hilarious, and probably the greatest things. I get into a conversation at work all the time about the shirt that I happen to be wearing for that particular day. So, I guarantee you're going to find something that you love. Head on over to homefieldapparel.com. Use promo code CHALK12. You can get 15% off your entire first order, and all orders over $100 get free shipping. All right, Keegan, I do want to go ahead and talk about the Oklahoma offense. But before we do that, I need to throw it to a quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
Welcome one, welcome all, and you are listening live to the one, the only Tortillas and Takes podcast.
From football to softball to track and field, tune in to get the best coverage in everything that is Texas Tech.
Not only that, but find out what unsuspecting star we get to interview and put on the hot seat.
Whether you like corn or flour, eating them or throwing them, this tortilla is for you. So listen to Tortillas and Takes.
And as always, stay wrecked, people.
And we're back. I am here with Keegan Reneau. We are talking about the Oklahoma Sooners and the interesting start that they've had to the season so far. And I do think that one of the interesting things about it has been, obviously, the offense and Dylan Gabriel getting injured against TCU has been a big story. But I got to be honest, I've been watching this Oklahoma team, you know, for all the stuff I do over on the 10-12. And, you know, I kind of flagged that first half against Kent State where the offense had tons of issues. You know, and I mean, there have definitely been times where this offense seems to have gone into big lulls that last for a large portion of games where it doesn't seem like they really have any business of, you know, stalling out there. So what is it about this offense that has been having so many problems even before Dylan Gabriel went out with injury?
Well, I think you have to account for they're a very fast tempo team, and you're going to get a lot of possessions. And I do think that the Kent State game was very alarming from a running game perspective more than anything. And that has been something that I thought has improved a lot over the last 3 weeks. And I do think that that's an area of the game where they could potentially lean on teams in the run game. Like, it was so weird seeing the offensive line not get pushed around last week in the first half. Again, I'm accounting for the first half. The second half was a whole different story, right?
Right.
It was really weird. You know, like, I think your expectation ahead of the game is, like, after seeing them, is like, oh, my God, like, Moro Jomo and Keandre Coburn and Byron Murphy are just going to kick ass the entire time. And I've cussed probably more than I should on this podcast. But, like, they didn't, you know? And don't get me wrong, there were still times where there was bad offensive line play. But I know you Texas, like, it's always back and forth, right? Like,
right.
I think you could also probably, on the other flip side, say Quinn Ewers was pressured way too much for how bad Oklahoma's defensive line has been. Now, obviously, Quinn made some plays with his legs in that game that really, really helped him. But more to the point, like, I've been surprised. I was thinking after the Kansas State game that offensive line in the first half might be doomed. And then they came out in the second half against Kansas State and ran the ball well. And they ran the ball effectively against TCU before everything kind of hit the fan. And then you kind of have the rest of what's coming. So, offensively for them, the running game is starting to pick up. And I think you know, if this was a utopia, right? I think, well, if you look at it, you know, you would hope the run game is continuing to improve while Dylan Gabriel is back. But obviously that's a leap that I'm not ready to make quite yet. And obviously Dylan Gabriel's got to be better too. I mean, I think you said it. He's got to be, he's just got to execute better. There's, I mean, Oklahoma's offense has been schematically fine. And I think maybe not as far down the road from where Lincoln Riley was at than I thought. Now, don't get me wrong. It's gimmicky. It is definitely the RPO Baylor offense, right, from our Briles' time. And so, but at the same time, too, like, there's been some elements to this game and this offense that I've been thoroughly impressed with. And it's really – Lincoln Riley has completely, like, screwed me as it goes to, like, offensive evaluation. And so I think it's been pretty good, and that's better than I thought it would be at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely fair to say that, you know, stuff has gotten better, especially schematically. But, yeah, Oklahoma fans are definitely a little spoiled when it comes to, you know, high-flying offenses that are able to pretty much do whatever they want because...
Yeah, that first half against Kansas State with Dylan Gabriel, I think, was the moment for everybody that was like, yeah, this guy's not the guys that have been here the last 6 years, 7 years.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's been interesting. And kind of to your point, like, I looked at, you know, I looked at the TCU-Oklahoma game and saw, like, that first quarter before Dylan Gabriel went out in the second quarter, you know, the plays were there. The guys were open. Like, they had plenty of opportunities to get out there and score. Dylan Gabriel just couldn't hit any of them. Like, it was, really bad. Way over their heads, you know, at 2 yards ahead of them on the ground. It was just all over the place. And so I wonder, though, you know, how much worry there is, because that's not the first time that he's had issues where he goes through a large stretch of a game where he's just, you know, completely inaccurate. You know, I think the hope is that it only lasts for like a quarter and then he gets it all together and they start clicking. But how much of that is like what Oklahoma has to rely on? Is that pretty much the only option you guys have, is to hope that the one bad quarter isn't bad enough that, you know, you can come back and, or, you know, I guess, you know, exert your will in the first three quarters and hope that the fourth quarter isn't bad enough to undo it all? Or like, how does Oklahoma plan around the fact that it seems consistently like they go into big lulls?
Yeah. You know, there's a couple things. I thought Brent Venables' comments this week about tempo were really interesting. You know, not saying he's like, hey, we need to slow it down by any means, but definitely we need to think about that stuff a little bit more. Game flow and all the other things that go into managing a football game. And so, you know, offensively for them, it's just a matter of, you know, putting, you know, can you put an eight to nine, 10 play drive together? Because it's been 6 plays, minute and a half, touchdown, 3 plays, punt, 45 seconds. Right. And so that's just not sustainable. And like I said, I think the high possession with the tempo and plays that they're running, I think the high possession game that they have, I think it does present opportunity to go through some lulls, but also be able to still have a lot of drives that result in points, right? Whenever you're having a minute and a half, minute 45 drive, that's only 7 plays or 6 plays. There's just going to be a ton of possessions. The problem in the Kent State game is when you start that lull from the beginning and kind of going to a point here into where you're going, when you have that lull at the beginning of the game, it could be really troublesome, right? And you get yourself in a hole and you get yourself in a bad situation. You know, Dylan Gabriel obviously made a bad throw to Marvin Mims and that ball gets poked out for a fumble. You know, that's been, I think, on some people's minds, and Norman, I could tell you, of like, what does that game look like if Marvin Mims doesn't fumble? And, you know, I think that whenever you continue to move forward with this offense, you know, we don't know. Like, this Kansas game is definitely going to be, you know, I have an expectation for Dylan Gabriel. I have an expectation for how they should play, but that's a should thing, right? It's like the conversation I was having in the offseason. There was a big difference between Oklahoma will win the Big 12 and Oklahoma should win the Big 12. And I tried to articulate that as much as I could of like, hey, the data says they're good, but my God, are there caution flags everywhere around you?
Yeah,
with them. And again, it's just one of those things. They should be better on Saturday. Like, they're going to play. I think they'll be better offensively. And quite frankly, Saturday is the game that you pay Jeff Lebby the money to get him from Ole Miss for, right? If they can't go put up 40, 50 in this game and find a way to get away with a win, Man, I mean, I don't even know if 38 is going to be enough to win this game.
No, it probably right. won't be. Like, this is probably going to be one of those games that's like 48-45 or something like that. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if this turns into like a North Carolina App State type of game where, like, you know, we're getting up into the high 50s for both of these teams. Because but it is one of those weird things because, right, this Kansas defense has had very successful outings. And it's one of those weird things because Lance Leipold talked about it in the press conference. Like, you look at the 38 points that TCU put up and the way that that defense played, it was not a, you know, 38-point performance in terms of a team scoring that much on them. There was ridiculous catches that were made by Quentin Johnson. Like, there was some really weird and crazy stuff kind of happening, and the offense put them in a bad situation with, you know, that interception on the 25. Like, there was a bunch of other things, but they completely shut down a very high-powered TCU offense in that first half. So, you know, they've shown that they can go ahead and do that. You know, I'm looking at, like, their rushing numbers. They're only allowing 3.3 yards per carry average. You know, they're only allowing 120 yards a game. So, like, this is actually a fairly good rushing defense. I don't think it's the kind of credit that it needs to be getting. They have been very good about being in the right situations. And even when teams do get runs, you know, Kansas has been making a lot of teams, while they do give up some explosive plays, they're not giving up a lot of explosive run plays. They're giving up, you know, passes over the top. And so it's one of those things where I am a little curious how Oklahoma is going to do this, because, like you said, they seem to have been leaning more and more on the running game as they've been starting to get better. But this is a Kansas team that's pretty good at shutting down most teams' running games. So I'll be interested to see if Dylan Gabriel, you know, he's going to have to, I think, be pretty accurate in this game and have a big game. Because otherwise, Kansas has an opportunity to tee off on the run, you know, slow down the run, and then Gabriel's going to have all that extra pressure of, well, I haven't been playing very well, now I have to get it turned on, or else this could spiral out of control pretty quick.
I think there's been one of the problems with him this year, too. I mean, I would say he just got to calm down. I mean, it literally looks like early year. Not comparing the two at all. I don't think Dylan Gabriel is going to go off and have one of the best careers in the history of the sport by any means. But Baker Mayfield had these yips issues early on in his career too. And during his early season in 2015, mid-2015, you know, he had some yips, you know, missed some throws. And I think, you know, I don't know. I don't want to put my – I don't know if I'd ever want to be the quarterback at University of Oklahoma for those reasons. Now, the NIL money would be great these days. But, you know, going from UCF – the expectation there to play at Oklahoma is huge. And, you know, dealing with those expectations can be hard. And I don't even know if he has mechanical issues. You know, I know that's been talked about over the last couple of weeks. Like, it's just calm down, man. Just simple, easy throws you're being asked to make. And to your point, yeah, Kansas is going to sell out one way or the other. That's what they've been this year. They're either going to sell out to stop the run or they're going to be sell out to stop the pass. And they've been really, really good against the run the last couple of weeks specifically. And I'm, you know, Kenny Logan and what that secondary specifically, Kobe Bryant, that's probably a more talented secondary than what a lot of people are giving them credit for. And don't get me wrong, number 90 in the middle, their defensive tackle is pretty good. So, you know, I think they're going to have some opportunity to generate some negative plays and force Oklahoma to some tough downs. I do. I just don't know if Oklahoma chooses to make a commitment to the run game, and specifically to some schemes that I think can work this week. I think it's going to be a track meet. I think there's going to be is 1,000 yards for both, like, combined for both teams out of the picture?
Oh, no, it's not. I mean, I could see both of these offenses hitting 600 yards. Like, I wouldn't put that out of the question. So the other thing that's going to be very interesting, because this Kansas team, when they've been good against the pass, they usually get better against the pass throughout the game. Because they have a defensive line that's so deep, they can rotate so many different guys in. And the drop-off from, you know, their second and third line of the defensive line is not very big at all, except for, obviously, Lonnie Phelps, who has been absolutely phenomenal. But the rest of the line, you know, has been fairly consistent from one player to the next. So you talk about, you know, Caleb Sampson, Malcolm Lee, you know, Sam Burt, and then you bring in Hayden Hatcher and Jeremy Robinson, you know, and you bring in a bunch of these guys that have all been playing at a fairly consistent level. It wears down offensive lines. of the opposing team. You know, we saw West Virginia wear down. We saw Houston wear down. We saw Duke wear down, and the team got stronger as they went. And even TCU had problems with the number of people that could come through that line. So I am kind of curious, how much of a worry is that in terms of, you know, this offensive line for Oklahoma holding up over the course of four quarters to keep Kansas from getting home? Because Lonnie Phelps has gotten he's averaging one sack a game, and usually the sack that he gets, you know, is very meaningful in, you know, the drive that's there. Like, I don't think that teams have been able to finish a drive after he's gotten a sack all year long. So how much of a worry is there about pass protection here, especially if Gabriel has not been, you know, or gets into a situation where he's not necessarily the most accurate, or he's looking for passes downfield?
It's been surprising how well they've been. It's been the run blocking that has been the big issue with the offensive line. You know, Dylan Gabriel's created a lot of his pressures, which is not abnormal for an Oklahoma quarterback, as everyone knows. So I think, you know, there's going to be some mismatches. I mean, center left guard for Oklahoma is a problem. It's been a problem for a minute. They've been better the last couple weeks, as I said, but I mean, it doesn't take away the fact that those guys can still get beat. And there's plenty of tape out there of those guys getting beat consistently. And obviously a lot of people are like, oh, you know, why don't they just go ahead and jump and make a change with personnel, whatever it may be. That stuff doesn't happen until the bye week. You know?
Well, like, that and different may not be better. Like,
well, I don't know if it can get any worse than what it's been.
No, fair. But it may not be that much better. Like, it may not be enough of a difference to really be that much different.
And it could be it could also be a cohesiveness thing too, yeah. Right? Like, this group's just better together, which, again, it's rough news for Oklahoma if this is where that group's at. So, they've been better. You know, I don't suspect all that much. I suspect some of the run game stuff. Oklahoma should probably find some success on the edges, which is where they did find some success against Kansas State, as well as TCU at times, not into the middle of the defense, which should tell you everything, you know, how they feel about their interior of their offensive line. And so I do think that they have, like I said, I think there's schematic stuff and concept driven things that Oklahoma does offensively that is going to be really, really hard for Kansas to stop. But it's also at the same time too, I mean, it's the other way around. I know I keep throwing it back of like, you know, how can the Kansas defense stop? How can they do this? You know, I think for both sides, like both offenses, how many times can you keep the opposing defense from putting you into second and 10, into third and 8? How often can you get into second and 4? How often are you picking up first downs on first down if you're Oklahoma, right? Because if they get into second and 10, it is, I mean, it's almost a guaranteed punt at this point for them. So,
yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, I have a strong belief. I've had it for, as you know, I've had it for about 4 weeks now that Oklahoma is going to have to start out scoring some people. Like, the game hasn't changed all that much for them. And obviously this is the real, like, first opportunity. And, you know, the 34-10 thing with Dylan Gabriel being out, don't get me wrong, TC probably would have ended up scoring 70 in that game if the gas pedal was on. There's also the caveat, the night before we saw Washington was down 24 to UCLA heading into the fourth quarter. Again, different teams, different situations, all that stuff. That offense that Oklahoma has can score in a hurry if they do get rolling. I mean, wouldn't have surprised me if Dylan Gabriel didn't get hurt, if that TCU game would have ended up like a 59-45 game after what we saw of TCU's defense last week. Like, I don't think that would have surprised me. I don't know if I'd completely discount this OU offense not being a top 10 offense quite yet. So at the same time, just kind of wrap up everything where my head's at. I think they're pretty good offensively. I trust Jeff Lebby as a coordinator. I'm going to be very clear about that, as an offensive coordinator and play caller. And I think they have a good plan. Like, I think they'll bounce back this week. And the last thing I'm going to talk about the Texas game. I know everybody points to the 0 points. I know everybody points to 0 points. For anybody that is listening to this podcast that has played the game of blackjack, I'm gonna make a gambling reference here. Just because the dealer shows a six and you have sevens, it doesn't mean you don't split them. You do it every time because that's what the book tells you to do. Oklahoma split sevens against Texas, and the dealer ended up turning a 21 and got their ass handed to them. Right? Like, it happens. They played the game exactly how you're actually supposed to play to try to win with the situation they were in.
Right.
And it flipped up, and it literally flipped right up on their head, right? When you don't get a fourth and two pickup, when you throw an interception on a jump pass in the red zone, right? Like, so it happens.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely some execution issues, but you look at who was in the game, right? Like, you look at the fact they were their backup quarterback. Like, you expect some execution issues. You still have to play the game a certain way to have an opportunity to win it. So, like,
how the hell? They don't even have a backup quarterback, Andy.
Yeah.
That's the whole misnomer. They have one quarterback. That's it.
You know it's bad when you have five different players that throw a pass in that game, and the punter is the one. I'm sorry. Was it the punter or the holder? No, the holder.
Punter.
The punter was the holder on the fake field goal, right? He was the second best passer with 3 yards total. Like, that's how bad it was. So, yeah. Okay, so I will definitely be very interested. I think Kansas has shown times that they are able to jump up and get some big stops. And kind of to your point, Oklahoma is definitely at the point where they have to start outscoring people. Unfortunately for them, I honestly think that, you know, of the next four, this is probably the most difficult one to outscore because of how strong this Kansas offense is. You know, Iowa State, you know, you'll have problems outscoring them more because their defense is able to shut you down as opposed to their offense actually outscoring you. You know, Baylor has shown plenty of problems on both sides of the ball that you could see that one going pretty much anyway. And then it's West Virginia that we're talking about here, where West Virginia can score a decent amount, but their defense has a lot of issues as well. Kansas is a team that has a very good offense. You know, you could make the argument that it's probably the second best offense in the Big 12 right now, at least the way that it's performing. And obviously other teams are starting to round into form, and so we'll see how much that holds. But there's no denying that this is a very good Kansas offense. So let's go ahead and wrap up just a couple more things here really quick. First of all, our pick segment that we have every single week here going into the weekend, that is sponsored by prizepicks.com. They are the easy legal way to play daily fantasy. They are available in almost every state, so you'll need to make sure. But they allow you to pick a bunch of different stats from a bunch of different players in a bunch of different games. And it's not just, you know, college football. They have NFL, they have NBA, they have MLB, they have, you know, Premier League, they have a whole bunch of different stuff. So you pick anywhere from 2 to 5 players, you know, make your entry, and you can win up to 10 times of that entry if you hit all of those, I guess, decisions that you make in terms of overs and unders on player statistics. So, and right now, if you go over to prizepicks.com, use promo code CHALK12, you can get a 100% instant deposit match up to your first $100. So, you know, great opportunity to get in there, get started, have a whole lot of fun. They have some really interesting picks usually every single week. And of course, we're going to do what we normally do here, which is take a look at all of the ones for this Kansas game and see which ones kind of jump out to us. I was a little surprised that there was a lot of players that I thought might show up here that didn't. I actually only have, looks like 6 different props from this particular game, which is a little weird, but Jason Bean is the only one that they did any kind of projection on the number of yards. I'm guessing it's because even though everyone expects Dylan Gabriel to play, they're not 100% certain that he's actually going to play. You know, he's still technically in the concussion protocol, even though I think everybody assumes that he's going to get passed before they actually get to this game. And, of course, we just spent a whole bunch of time talking about it as if he's definitely in, even though it's not officially as of the time that we're recording this. But Jason Bean, they have getting 240.5 yards. If you take a look at that, do you think it's more likely he gets over or under that?
Read it to me one more time.
240.5 yards.
Over.
Yeah, it's hard for me to think that this one's going to be under. I mean, you look at what he did just last week, you know, in a single half, which, like, that's kind of crazy to think, right? In a single half, he threw for 262 yards. So to think he's going to go an entire game and not get over 250, I think is honestly a little weird. I was surprised it was that low. It seems like the only way that goes under is if Kansas has problems, you know, in terms of just moving the ball in general, which, as we talked about, I don't think is really very likely at all. In terms of running, they have Eric Gray, 92.5 yards for Oklahoma, Devin Neal for Kansas, 72.5 yards, and then Jason Bean for Kansas, 37.5 yards. Any of those jump out to you?
Over on the Jason Bean, I do want to say I heard Dylan Gabriel's name on the last one. Was it Jason Bean, the over 240?
Yes, Jason Bean.
Yeah, I'd probably take an under on that. I would have taken the over on the running, though.
Yeah,
so I would take the over on the running. I think Jason over 37.5. He's going to have like 50 plus yards rushing this
week. Yeah, yeah. So they didn't have anything for Gabriel.
I would wager almost Jason Bean having more rushing yards than passing yards on Saturday.
Oh, no, I don't think that that's the case at all. I think they have so many deep threats, so many guys that can, you know, he can just chuck the ball to.
Have you seen OU defend the quarterback run game? I got
people. No, that's true. That's true.
For people that are watching this, I got real close to my camera.
Yeah, yeah, but no. Well, I mean, do you really think that Jason Bean's going to run for 250 yards? Because I have a hard time.
I think he can go for like 150 plus.
Right, and it's one of those things. In a half against TCU, he threw for 262 yards. So, like, I have a hard time thinking that over the course of the entire game, again, unless Kansas' offense gets completely shut down, I have a hard time imagining that he is not going to be able to get 250 or more in an entire game.
On the Devin Neal rushing, I would probably take the over on all the rushing stats.
I probably would as well. The one thing I will note is that I don't believe Kansas has allowed a 100-yard rusher in a while. But Gray only needs to get 93 yards to go over that. I do think that there's a good chance he's going to get pretty close to 100. He may not go over 100, but he honestly could smash it as well if Kansas decides, hey, the only guy that's going to be able to do anything for Oklahoma is Eric Gray rushing. Like, I could see that being a possibility, that's the only thing that they really let happen. So, okay, and then the final one, they don't have any of the receivers for Oklahoma for whatever reason. I'm guessing it's for the same reason that they don't have Dylan Gabriel for Oklahoma on the passing yard. So for Luke Grimm, the numbers they have are 4.5 receptions or 49.5 yards.
Again, I think Kansas' success, I know I've been alluding to it, man, I think it's all going to come on the ground. I know they've been throwing the ball a little bit better this year. It's been so situational. I would be almost cautious moving forward with anything Kansas in the passing game. Now, if Jalen Daniels was playing, I'd have a different conversation.
See, I think a lot of people are underselling what Jason Bean can do in the passing game. It almost feels like nobody believes what they saw from him last week, against TCU. But it's one of those things, that's the kind of stuff that he was showing the ability to do towards the end of last year. Like, we saw him be able to do some stuff against Oklahoma as well last year. Like, we have seen him have those types of performances before.
It's just that every third throw, man. It's like that every fourth throw, I'm just like, did it come out of the right spot? Did he throw it out of the right angle? Did it come out of his hand right? Did it come out of his hand wrong?
But it's like, working.
It does.
That is almost the exact, and again, I'm not saying that he is like this at all, okay? I'm not saying he is this player, but those are the exact same things that people would say about a guy like Patrick Mahomes. Like, it doesn't look the way it's supposed to look, but it's working. So, like, if it's working, you can't really knock he does it unconventionally.
I was going to go for a, like, exact opposite version of what Adrian Martinez's arm is, but sort of the same kind of expectation, right? Like, Adrian Martinez has a noodle arm and Jason Bean throws a fastball. Like, that's the biggest difference between
them. I mean, yeah, that's not that inaccurate in terms of, you know, like, that analogy there. But, no, I think for me, Luke Grimm is the guy that has been, like, he is becoming that safety valve, the guy that you throw to. So I would not be shocked at all if he gets, like, you know, 8 or 9 catches in this game, because even if they're really short ones. But he's also good for one, you know, 30 to 40 yard catch where he, you know, gets past the guy just enough to drop one in right into his hand. So I have a hard, I don't think he's actually been stopped or held under 50 yards at all this year. I'm actually going to look at his game log right now just to be sure that I'm not. I'm sorry. He was held to only 6 yards against Houston because he only caught the ball twice, and he was just under against Iowa State. Again, I don't think that Oklahoma's passing defense is going to be to the same level of either of those two teams, honestly. And so, you know, and the fact that he is now becoming like the guy in terms of in that passing game, I fully expect him to get a decent number of catches, and I expect him to go well over those yards. It'll be interesting. It's kind of a similar sort of thing. I just, unless Jason Bean gets completely shut down in the passing game, I think that a big chunk of those yards are going to go to Luke Grimm. So, I would probably take over on both of those. But then again, I am a Kansas fan who is very, very high on this offense. So it's probably not that surprising.
Oh, you're not alone. You're not alone on being high on this offense. I can tell you that.
Well, true.
So the thing with the Iowa State game that obviously was a concern was the scheme was getting guys open downfield. And there just wasn't enough times the ball was finding the receiver, right?
Right,
and
right. Daniels was off in that game. Like, it was very similar to me because I actually made this comment. Daniels in the Iowa State game reminded me a lot of Gabriel in the TCU game, where he had guys open, the scheme was getting guys where they needed to be, and he just couldn't hit them for whatever reason. And it didn't look like Iowa State was getting a ton of pressure on him for those particular throws, just like it didn't look like TCU was getting a ton of pressure on Gabriel for those throws. So, like, it was just the guy was off for that particular game. And yeah, so, like, I mean, I could see that happening with Bean, potentially, but until I actually see it from him and see it from him consistently, I have to believe that, you know, everything he's shown with that huge arm that he has, that he's going to be able to get it. I mean, he was dropping dimes in against TCU, like, all over the place, coming off the bench. So it'll be interesting, I think, to see how the preparation over the course of the week might change, you know, if they try to add more stuff and he's overthinking stuff or things like that. But if it just comes down to whether he can hit an open guy streaking down the field, I have to believe that he can do that pretty much every single time.
I would hope so. I think the thing specifically more, you know, where I'm at with Kansas is that they rely so much on those plays and they have, at least early on in the season, and they've had success on a down-to-down basis. And I don't want to take – I'm not – again, as someone that is really, really high on this Kansas offense, I don't want to take anything away from anything that they've done. If those plays don't land, the Iowa State game happens, right, where you're in a close one, you're in a tough battle. Thankfully for Kansas this week, there's going to be a lot of open receivers. There's going to be a lot of open running lanes. And so, obviously, this is a matter of them making it. But obviously, yeah, I think that – we're coming to find out as teams prepare a little bit more, their teams are now taking, okay, again, I want to give Parker Fleming some credit here. Like, Kansas is no longer a meme, right? So, you know, I think that it's going to be interesting to see if these just open, my God, how is he so open, situation continue. But again, it's every week. So why? So, like, I say all that.
It's not a bug. It's a feature at this point.
Yeah. I say from the aspect of, like, typically that stuff doesn't carry over week over week over week over week over week. But,
well, typically people start to scheme to stop it from happening. But I think the thing that you've seen from Kansas is that they've been able to do it in a bunch of different ways. It's not like you have this one guy who's going to burn.
It's a new play.
It's a new look.
It's a new concept.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Amazing, man.
Yeah.
He is a
a wizard.
Dude, I wish I do see Leopold being a guy that could possibly stick through this coach. I could see just reading the clippings of him. Obviously, he is gonna be a major target during this next round.
Yeah, for sure.
Coaching carousel. Man, I hope he can stick it around, specifically if Jalen Daniels comes back and they can keep him healthy for an entire year, see what Leopold can do in the portal again. Now, going to that well twice and finding that same success, as we've seen with our friends up at up in East Lansing with Mel Tucker, sometimes you go down the well twice, it doesn't work out. But again, it's not just a cool story. Like, that's been what I've been trying to hammer home. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I definitely said, like, I don't see any way that offensive line got any better. I didn't see any way the defense got any better. But, I mean, these guys can play, man. They play harder than you. They're more physical than you at the point of attack. They're more disciplined. And we're not even talking about the crazy awesome scheme that they have on offense either. Like, that's the part that comes after all the things I just mentioned.
And what we saw last year was that they were getting used to what was being asked of them. They weren't thinking about stuff as much. And so they played better against Texas and then TCU and then West Virginia. Like, you saw the building blocks of this as guys were starting to come to the realization of what they needed to do without having to overthink it. And so this year you've had plenty of guys that have gone through the entire offseason process that have had that drilled into them so that it's not thinking about stuff as they're going. It's second nature for them at this point. So it's definitely improved. I do think also coming into, like, next year, they're not going to have to hit the portal nearly as hard because they don't have as many of their big contributors that are leaving. You know, and they also have a you know, they have a decent recruiting class coming in. You know that they're going to get a bit of a recruiting bump out of this year at least. So, you know, they're going to have, I think, a lot of opportunities to find more guys to fill the holes. The real question is, if Leipold decides to leave, I don't think he will. And based off everything that I've heard from him, it seems like he is here for at least the next couple years because he feels like there is still business for him to do here. It will be interesting, though, if a... You know, if Nebraska, I don't think Nebraska is going to be the one that's going to be able to pull him just because of the way that is. I think if he goes somewhere, it's probably going to be Wisconsin. So I'm pulling hard for Leonard to be able to nail down that job and be able to keep it.
That'd be a good hire. If Wisconsin went that route, I'd be all for that.
But yeah, exactly. Yeah. So kind of looking at this and everything that we've talked about at this point. So let's go ahead and do it. What is your prediction for how this game is going to go?
I expect Oklahoma's offense to come out swinging this week. I do think that they've shown some stuff over the last 3 weeks that you could put a picture together of what this thing could potentially look like against Kansas on Saturday. So I expect them to be pretty good. The thing that obviously concerns me on Oklahoma's end is the thing that a little bit concerned me with TCU is whenever – you're explosive but not efficient, and you're playing a Kansas team that requires you and is going to ask you to be – if you're not efficient against Kansas, you're going to be in a long game. It's going to be an absolute dogfight. And so what we saw with TCU is that they've been boom or bust almost this entire season. You saw against Iowa State. They weren't efficient on a down-to-down basis, and you're going to get a dogfight with Iowa State. I don't know if Oklahoma's disciplined enough defensively to avoid that. I think if Kansas wants to make it a low possession game and really force Dylan Gabriel to be efficient and be accurate and play it at his highest level, like that concerns me. If Kansas wants to get this into a track meet and play with tempo and try to push the ball down the field and doing that, I think that plays into Oklahoma's hand. And so I think we're going to learn very quickly on Saturday, these first couple drives of what kind of style of game is it going to be? Because I don't think anybody knows. And if anybody's telling you exactly what this game plan from either side is going to be, they're foolish. I would play a low possession game. I think there is still a little bit of a division, not like team wise, like the teams are playing similar. There's still a little bit of a talent gap here that I think Kansas has to close that gap on. And so I would play a low possession game. I'd figure it out. But at the same time too, like, I don't think it could be ruled out that Kansas can just go up and down the field on.
Yeah. I think what's probably going to happen here is that I think Kansas' preferred style is going to be what they've done against a lot of people. They're going to try to go quickly on offense, and the defense is literally just going to try to bog down the opponent's offense. And they've done that very successfully against a lot of different people. And that's what happened against TCU, right? The offense wasn't able to do much in that first half, but the defense did exactly what they wanted, made TCU take, you know, 9 or 10 plays to get down the field, you know, give them opportunities to make mistakes that they could capitalize on. This is a team, like, normally it's a really bad thing, right? Like, if your defense is on for 9 or 10 plays and then your offense comes on and they're really quickly back off the field, whether it's they score really fast or, you know, they go 3 and out. I don't know that Kansas really minds if their offense comes off the field quickly. Because that defense, the way that they are successful late in games is by requiring, like, you know, that's why I think they were, well, one, Iowa State's offense is not great at all. But part of it, too, is that you saw Kansas get stronger as Iowa State had more and more plays. You know, they were getting little chunk yards. And at the beginning of the game, they were getting 5 and 6 yard chunks. At the end of the game, they were getting like 2 yard chunks because Kansas started to, you know, constrict, started to really kind of use that depth to their advantage. And so it'll be very interesting, I think. I almost think the perfect game plan for Kansas, what they're going to try to do is move quickly on offense, but not necessarily be afraid to take, you know, those 4 or 5 yard chunks that they can get and move slowly if they need to. But then the defense is not necessarily concerned about getting off the field quickly. They want to use that advantage. They want to use the depth that they have and start wearing down the Oklahoma offensive line. So that way when they get into the fourth quarter, if they're still in a tight game, they can use that, you know, the fresh legs that they have to cause Dylan Gabriel to make mistakes. And that's really what this Kansas defense is all about, is making the opponent make a mistake that they can then capitalize on. Kobe Bryant has had, you know, 2 huge picks, and you can almost look Well, you can look at each of those. It's because a guy lost focus. A guy was worn out or had something going on, and he, you know, pounced on the fact that the guy wasn't focusing on what he should have been and was able to make a big play. So I will be interested to see how much, like, I don't know that Gabriel can afford to have an entire quarter where he's just not, you know, very accurate at all, because Kansas will take full advantage of that and build a bunch of momentum.
Yeah, not just even build momentum, but I think when you look at the psyche of this Oklahoma team right now, I mean, if you have a 10, 12 play demoralizing drive, it's going to be, I mean, I don't know how these guys are going to respond. I mean, they haven't responded well the last couple weeks, and they haven't responded well against Kansas today when it happened. So, yeah, just to kind of wrap up, I think Oklahoma will be fine offensively from the get-go, and that should set the tone from the game, I think, for both sides of the ball. I think Leopold will figure out how he's going to have to win after the first drive for each team. And I think Oklahoma, the same thing. Like, I don't see a world where anybody really has a good feel on what the flow of this game is going to be. The obvious big question mark comes of if Oklahoma can get out to an early lead, which has been really tough for them the last 3 weeks, is if they can do that, I think they can kind of control the pace of the game and play it at the pace that they want. I think the perfect, the way this game's going to go, and because I know this is the perfect way it's going to go, Oklahoma's going to jump out to a big lead, and they're going to start feeling real good about themselves because they've played like crap the last 3 weeks. And then they're going to let Kansas back in the game. And somehow there's going to be like a backdoor cover that gets this game with an A. Like, that's
hopefully
how I feel with this one.
Yeah, see, I'm completely opposite. And this might be arrogant Kansas fan, you know, who finally has some success and rides it. But I just, you know, I've been looking at this Oklahoma defense and looking at the lulls on offense. And, you know, I said it a few weeks ago. It's like, man, starting to feel worse or more worried about the TCU game at home than you are about the Oklahoma game on the road. And that says a lot, I think, about where, you know, both of these programs are and how this season has been going for both of these teams. But no, this is a Kansas team that has not had a problem with getting down early and immediately flipping momentum. They got down 14-0 to West Virginia and went on a huge run. I think they ended up going on like a 28-7 run to go ahead and take the lead there. And then led for basically the rest of that game, you know, other than letting West Virginia tie it to go to overtime. Houston, they got down 14-0 really early and immediately went on a 42-7 run from that point forward. So, like, this is a team that is used to dealing with deficits, figuring out how to make changes. And I think the thing that gives Kansas the advantage that they've had against a lot of the teams they played is that both the offensive and defensive coordinator are experts at making adjustments, finding out why things are not going well for them in a game, and then finding a way to make a change. Obviously, execution is an issue at times, and that can really throw a wrench in some of those things. But I am not worried at all about Kansas's ability to come back from a semi-large deficit. Even I think if Oklahoma got up, you know, 21-0 at the end of the first quarter, something like that, I fully expect Kansas to have it back within a score by, you know, halftime, and then have an opportunity to take the lead sometime in the middle of the third quarter. Like, this is an offense that's that explosive and a defense that is able to turn on a dime and be able to make a big stop and turn that momentum. So I think this is going to be a dogfight the entire way. I think that, like you said, I think both of these offenses are going to have a really good day. You know, Kansas is essentially going to do their bend but not break thing that they typically do. They're going to try to, you know, and a stat we haven't talked about is Kansas is one of the best teams in the nation in terms of red zone touchdowns. You know, once they get in the red zone, they go ahead and score touchdowns. And the defense has been very good at not allowing the opponent to do the same. So it will be very interesting. I think that might be the telling statistic. If Oklahoma gets into the red zone and doesn't convert at least 2/3 of those opportunities into touchdowns, then I think Kansas can use that to their advantage and actually come away with the win here. I do think this is going to be really close. I think Kansas is going to cover regardless. I think if Oklahoma wins, it's probably going to be by a single touchdown, but I would not rule out the possibility that Kansas could win this game by, you know, 7 or 10 points if things start to go well for them. So I am going to lean towards the Kansas hot start continuing and that they are going to go ahead and get a bowl win or a bowl eligibility victory here. But it's weird to be in this kind of situation and kind of talk about that. It's also one of those things that Oklahoma is going to be very desperate in this game, because if they go down to 0-4 in the conference to start the year, you thought maybe as an Oklahoma fan that it might not be super smooth with Venables coming in, but I don't think anybody expected it to get to this point even.
No, Yeah, and I mean, every situation, unprecedented situations yield unprecedented results. And, you know, I was harping on early in January that anybody that this year was going to be a mystery and anybody had any like firm feeling on how Oakland was going to play, you were a little bit crazy. Obviously, playing the odds when you looked, I had Oklahoma finishing second in the conference right behind Kansas State to start the year. Obviously, you lose Dylan Gabriel a quarter of the way into the TCU game. That's going to change some expectations.
Yeah, a little bit.
So, yeah, with this game, you know, I wouldn't pick it against the spread. You heard me say that at the very beginning or in the middle part of this. I wouldn't pick it against the spread at all. I would take the over. I'd feel very good about it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Over all the way.
I think the winner in this game is going to be in the 40s. You know, I think like a score in my head that does make some sense is like a 48-37 game. But again, I wouldn't rule out Kansas, like Oklahoma getting off to a good start, feeling good about themselves, and letting Kansas back in. And if you let Kansas, if that momentum turns on Saturday inside that stadium, the fans are going to turn on the team. The players are going to turn on each other. They're going to stop trusting it, and it'll be ugly.
Yeah.
I don't envision that happening. I haven't seen Oklahoma in this spot very often. I don't know if I ever will the rest of my life see the University of Oklahoma football team in a situation like this. But there's just – it would be amazing if Kansas won this game, right? Like, I think you want to talk about – meltdowns and people getting fired and toxicness and all the things that come with it. Like, yeah, let Kansas win on Saturday in Norman and see what happens.
Oh, so gosh. Yeah. It could be
bad. To where I'm finishing with. I've been trying to map this thing out. I think Kansas can win this game. Like, it's not like this isn't one of those of like, there's no way hell like Oklahoma loses this game. Kansas can win this game. Like, and I've mapped out exactly how Kansas can win it. Do I envision that happening? I don't. This weekend, the spot for Oklahoma, they're in a such, like you said, desperate must win situation. I think their offense is going to play really well. And I think that's probably what's going to lead them to win at the end, but I would not rule out them feeling good about themselves with an early lead. And just that is like, again, if you want to talk about a perfect way this game plays out, get Oklahoma up to an early lead, let Canes get back into it and get into a dogfight. Cause I don't know if this Oklahoma team can get into that kind of game and win.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you're a Kansas fan, you just like Kansas to get out to an early lead and just keep it the entire game. But kind of to your point, like, I do think that Kansas has the resiliency and has the ability that if they get out to a lead and Oklahoma comes back, they have the ability to go ahead and turn it and, you know, fight that momentum and get it back in their favor, whereas I don't know that Oklahoma does. So it'll be very interesting to kind of see how all that goes. So, all right, Keegan, you know, I think this is going to be a record for the longest episode of the season. So awesome. But hey, a lot of great stuff that we were talking about. So for those that want to get more of your analysis and kind of look at everything that you're doing, where's the best place to find your work?
Yeah, I mean, obviously all my stuff's through my Twitter page for the most part. And I can tell you've read some of it heading into this podcast tonight. So yeah, you can just check me out at Keegan Renau, KEGANRENEAU. And we do some cool work with some data and analytics and, you know, a lot of stuff behind the scenes that obviously people don't see out of the public eye. But yeah, I mean, the things I share in this podcast are what I do for a living and what I actually consult and do, for my job. So, yeah, man, it's fun. I say on my Instagram, I wouldn't follow myself if I was on Twitter, but if you, you enjoy some crazy takes, not crazy takes. If you enjoy, well thought out football related things, you can find it on my Twitter page.
So what you're saying is there won't be any bold predictions like Kansas going to a bowl game this year.
Yeah. I mean, I have a tweet out there that's like, if you have Kansas not last in the Big 12, that you have a bad process and boy,
oh,
howdy.
Oh boy.
That flipped on me quick.
Oh boy. All right. Well, Keegan, thank you so much for joining me. And thank you guys so much for listening. If you have not already, please do go out wherever you get your podcast, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, any of the other million apps that are out there. Just search for Rock Chalk Podcast. You can subscribe, get every episode as soon as it comes out. If you give us a rating and a review, 5 stars, nice comments, it'd be absolutely fantastic. fantastic. But if for whatever reason you can't do that, just let us know what it is we can be doing better. We really do bring the podcast to you guys, get you all the information you need in as entertaining a way as possible. So if you have any comments, questions, suggestions, people you want to try to interview, anything like that, contact me by email at rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter at rockchalkpod. We are part of the 10-12 Podcast Network, covering all the teams in the Big 12 Conference, including the four new teams that are coming in next season. You can find all of the great shows that we have. I think we're up to 12 now, by going to 1012network.com, and you'll get links all there. And of course, all of our shows are over on the Sports Drink Network as well. You can find everything there. Fantastic shows that they have. So make sure you visit our sponsors, Home Field Apparel, Prize Picks. Use promo code CHALK12 to get those great deals. But that's going to do it for us today. Keegan, again, thank you for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.